Hello and welcome to the ILC Home webinar series. My name's Alan Souter. I'm the chair of ILC. I'm delighted to welcome you along. First of all, I guess a huge big thanks to our home corporate partners, that's Carpenters, CoreLogic, Innovation Group and ICAP. Really pleased to have your support, but even more pleased to have you listening along with us for something that I hope will be helpful to everybody who works in home claims. The idea of the podcast series is to chat to a few people, understand a few more of the areas that home claims get involved in, hopefully some entertaining stories as well as very informative ones. Very important that you give us any feedback, so please just give me a note at alan@iloveclaims.com. Be delighted to hear from you. But before anything else, let's listen to this week's podcast. And this podcast today, we're going to take a look back to the beginning, back to the 31st of March when we had our first webinar. And I'm going to be joined by two of the participants of that. So welcome to Will Cobell of L&G and Steve Kennedy of Safeline, who took part. This is like 23, 22 broadcasts ago, just to let you know how long we've been in this. Lockdown had just started. We were at that time trying to anticipate what's going to happen, how long it's going to happen for. We were busy locating people to home. So we can take a look back and see how people were coping and what was happening, all the confusion that was going on at the time. And today we're going to ask them what life was like then, what they thought. We're going to take a look at perhaps the journeys that the three of us have been on since then, some of the challenges. Have a chat about colleagues, of course, and maybe ask for the strangest situation they've ever been in. But we've certainly achieved a lot, and we'll visit that as well. So welcome, Will. Welcome, Steve. I guess first one to you, Will. Can you remember much about the 31st of March when you were sitting, as we've just said, with your Bristol Rovers sign behind you on the webinar, trying to contemplate the situation we had just undertaken and how we were going to cope with it? Do you remember much of what you said?
Yeah, hi, morning, Alan, morning, Steve. I think at that time, my overriding memory was hoping that the industry didn't panic. We're pretty good on in the claims sector at not panicking because we deal with surges every year. So we're well versed as claims professionals to not panic. But I think thinking back then, my overriding thought really, Alan, was don't panic. You know, don't panic. Let's not have the supply chain panic. Let's not have insurers panic. You know, all of us have heard stories from our parents and grandparents of the best of British and how British people had coped through world wars and so on. But I think not many of us have actually had a crisis like this in our lifetime. So just for me, it was the version of my own feeling of, let's just not panic and hope that everybody in our industry does the right thing, the right things for our customers. But at the time, there was just so much unknown. And I think one of the biggest concerns I had was financial stability for suppliers. As an insurer, that's always something that's really important. And we just didn't know what the next few months would hold around claim volumes and getting good cash flow out through the industry, which would keep things in a good spot for customers. So for me, it was just hoping and praying that people didn't panic in the industry. And that was what I can remember from that day and from that week.
What about you, Steve, then? What was your recollections of that? Because some of your people were still working, because
basically,
equipment's what you guys do, isn't it?
Yeah, well, we had a unique set of skills, and I agree 100% what Will said there, was not to panic, was to take a step back, try and think about what was going on. I mean, nobody knew. It was weird. There was so much uncertainty and fear, for jobs or what was going to happen. But I knew, I like a bit of a challenge, Alan, and this was certainly going to be a challenge. And I never thought I thought we could get through it just because of what we do. But like Will said, it was such an uncertain time. The insurance companies were fantastic. Our main client with payments and give us confidence to keep going in that respect. And our staff were, they were excellent. But again, right at the start, it was I don't know. It was just all of it. It was a bit weird. A wee bit surreal. And we'd done the first one. And since then, we've done, obviously, quite a few more with various claims management companies and insurers. But these have been a great help. But I think it was just... as you know, this thing came very close to home for me. So, like I said, we weren't taking it lightly. And it's been a weird period. But for Safeline Environmental, we haven't been too bad. I wouldn't say unscathed, but I must admit, due to what we do, we were quite fortunate to carry on in some respects.
Yeah. So, of course, you know, some of the stuff you've got is... you already deal with protective equipment, so you already had people pretty well trained by then. I said, yeah, a lot of the guys, I think, you know, when I look back and I look at it from both aspects here, I look at it from my own business and I look at it from an ILC front, there was certainly, I think, concern about, as Will said, about the ongoing viability of some of the supply chain. At least I think it's really gone yet, but there certainly was a lot more at the time which has been dealt with. And I guess I was a bit worried about some of my clients, some of my friends and colleagues in the business and how they would generally gone through. So what kind of journey, Will, have you been on since then? You know, that's now, it's ridiculous, isn't it? It's like coming up for 5 months, is it?
Yeah, coming up for 5 months.
Although it's gone on. Yeah. So Will, from your perspective, what's the journey been like since then?
It's been interesting and it's been really challenging, but I think, like Steve said, most claims professionals at a senior level in our market and our industry are used to challenging situations, and I think people work for people, and if you can keep your people well supported and make them feel valued and part of the solution and stay calm, then generally you'll get what you want out of your service. So I think the journey has been more about our people than the processes. But I think it was just that grinding halt, wasn't it, in March with works and replacements of content and the tranche of work in progress across our industry, where suppliers like Steve's guys and you know, building contractor partners and so on, I had to just completely exit site. And I think that panic and that quite understandable concern of the general public about the spread of the virus was a really huge challenge, because nobody wanted to be in contact with anybody. You know, well, the government was saying you couldn't, you know, you had to basically lock yourselves away. And I think for us, the journey has been, how do we manage that, and how do we get back to some form of normality? Because people are still going to have fires, people are still going to get burgled at some point, and people will still have water damage claims in their homes. We can't be in a situation where we're not helping them. And so I think the journey has been more looking at what the regulator expects from the market, from insurers and their supply chain partners, and determining what can you reasonably do to support those people and those customers through their existing or new claims. And so the journey has been one of continually adapting to the circumstances around you. I got to say, obviously, like a lot of people in a lot of industries, it wasn't helped in the early days of lockdown by, I'm not going to be critical or get political, but I would say that the government weren't hugely clear on their messaging, wasn't clear on what you could and couldn't do in, you know, from a building's perspective, and that was really tough to manage. And so the journey has been about just adapting to and interpreting those kind of situations. And obviously now we find ourselves in a situation whereby we're out of lockdown, but there's lots of local, or there is a couple of local lockdowns, and reacting to that. So it's been a bumpy journey, but I wouldn't say it's been one I've enjoyed, because it's obviously such a sad situation with the way that things have gone with coronavirus, but I've certainly enjoyed the challenge of keeping the wheels turning, and I've seen the best of our people and our industry over the last 3 months.
And that's, I think that's a good testament to it. We've seen some great
coming
back to them in a minute. Steve, from your perspective, so the journey was slightly different, is that you had some guys up and running and ready, and as we say, that's because your business is to deal with areas of buildings where you have to go in and protect here anyway. So you're little bit of a start, but at the beginning, you were there ahead of the rest of us because nobody was actually giving you the business to do that because of the situations that Will's explained to us just a second ago. So the journey and sort of, I guess, waiting for people to catch up with you.
Well, yeah, it was, I mean, me and Matt sat down, come in every morning, sat down, and looked at the pipeline, seen what we have. And we knew that there was going to come a time we're going to run out of insurance works, just general where people just didn't want us in their houses. And there wasn't much external works. We managed to pull some school work on. We do a lot of schools in the summertime. And because they closed, we managed to get in and do some school work in March and April, which was very beneficial and kept the team busy, kept the confidence high. But like Will says there, at the end, it showed our staff, it brought the best out of them. And we've learned a lot about quite a lot of them. There's quite a few of them self-isolated right from the start. We're worried about this and that, which is perfectly understandable. But quite a few of them stepped up to the plate, and it was refreshing to see. And we cracked on as best we can, best we could at the time. And it was a bit of a bumpy ride, but we managed to get through as best we could, and we had a decent April. It's been a bum and blow, but halfway through May we hit the buffers a bit insurance works wise, and we kind of knew we had to furlough half the guys. But we'd had enough work to keep going. The work was still coming in due to the forums, being on certain forums with certain insurers and having them relationships. And them relationships were priceless, absolutely priceless, that you build up over the years. I'm sure Will understands that. You can talk, you build these relationships up.
Yeah, sure.
You can call upon people at the time. It was all about sticking together in the industry, as more so than ever, because we didn't know what the hell we were up against. And all the relationships you build up during all the years, they were very important. You could bounce off each other. And, that gave me a lot of confidence. I must say, like I said, it's our staff, but the clients that were superb with us right through it as well. So
I think that was one of the key things. I'm just laughing at the amount of people that are now saying, listening to you saying I had a good April, but I don't want to blow. I know everybody knows she's going, oh, you just have, Steve.
We got away with it. We got away with it. Let's say, but
can't downgrade it now. maybe certainly agree with you over a lot of both of you. Looking from the two aspects I look at it from, certainly seeing some certainly in my own business working with suppliers and insurers, I've seen some phenomenal efforts from insurers to clear initially things like cash flow and work processes through. Yeah. I think I've seen a connection between certainly some insurers and most suppliers that I've never seen before. And if that enables a great build-up in trust, then I think policy...
Yeah, I think it does.
For a much customer journey.
Brought people closer together.
In future. In the industry. Certainly through the ILC webinars, we've seen a lot of that, a lot of good communication. Hopefully that has helped. Just want to talk about... we talk about some of the challenges as we've covered there. What about colleagues? What have your colleagues been doing that one has either impressed you, or two, if they have as well, cheered you up? Certainly know that from a previous conversation, Will, with a senior colleague of yours at L&G, that there were a few things mentioned, including you and another colleague flying about all over the country. Hopefully that's not exaggerated, delivering laptops to people, which is excellent. So that's both a good story. So what other things have your colleagues been doing that are a bit above and beyond and perhaps have brought a lighter-hearted moment to people throughout this challenging process?
Yeah, I think in a really odd way, Alan, they've actually come closer together. If you think about it, most of us spend more time with our colleagues pre-COVID than our own partners or children. And actually what you have in common with most of them, you share the same piece of carpet every day. You'll obviously have your friends at work, but most, you go to work for work. And what I've seen is so much more interaction. Obviously, it's like this. It's like, on the phone or on video. But actually, I've seen people that are generally quite reserved, quite introverted, quite quiet, reaching out and helping other people, because some, I think homework, we've got a mix in our business of people that work from home, but most people didn't. And although I run the supply chain, I also run our technical claims teams and with fraud liability and recovery subrogation, and all of those guys are office based, and some of them have worked for our business for 25 years, you know, pretty much in the same office, and all of a sudden they're working from home. And working from home works for some people and it doesn't for others, but this is a situation that's thrust upon them almost overnight. So I've been quite impressed with how, I think when you have a crisis like we're having with coronavirus globally and in the UK, I always felt that we would see probably the best of people, possibly the worst of people as well, but in the main, the best of people. I was brought up to believe that most people are good people and will help others. And I've just seen people just reaching out, helping others, pulling people up when they're down a bit. You know, like when I played rugby, you know, if your mate's on the ground, his face in the dirt, you pull him up before you move on to the next ruck. And I've just seen much more of that, really. I've seen quite a lot of camaraderie, and I've seen people coming together that wouldn't probably naturally gravitate towards each other in an office environment. And I've also seen leaders emerge. You know, I'm always looking for the next leader, the next team manager, the next operational manager. And often all you've got to go by is your own personal opinion and an interview at some point in the future in time. But actually, this has given me the ability to see people across my department and see a few leaders emerging. And if it wasn't for lockdown and coronavirus, I wouldn't have seen that. So I just think people have been kind to each other. And in the cut with everything going on outside of our industry about being kind to each other and so on, I've just seen people be kind more often. And that's something that's just been really nice to see. So yeah, that would be my take on how people have kind of come together during lockdown.
Yeah, sure. I mean, definitely being able to communicate with people and see them under different stress and circumstances. So over to you, Steve, without telling us how much your handicap has reduced over this period of time while you've been working, and without mentioning any, you know, reference to league champions or anything like that, because you do that quite a lot as it is.
Well, you can mention it all. You can mention it all you want.
How have you found colleagues across the board responding? Has it shown you some strength in people that you didn't really know had that strength before? Or just
yeah, 100%. One thing I have banged on about, apart from Liverpool, is since I've done these things, has been our staff. And like Will says, I've seen, you know, Will's, you guys had to work from home. We basically kept going so we could come in, you know, and the girls were working, the guys working from remotely from home, but pretty much operation was still, as we provided service, we still need to come in, open the yard up and open the office up and carry on. So for me, it wasn't much different. Like Will said, working from home, either you can or you can't. I certainly couldn't. And that's not being disrespectful to my wife one bit. But people-wise, the colleagues, they've been fantastic. And like I said, right from the start, they've been our strength, and hence why we provide such a good service. It's generally down to their enthusiasm, which, like Will said, it's come out more over the past. I think the fear, maybe the uncertainty, brought people together more. You know, it definitely shook things up. This thing, it still hasn't gone away, of course. But I think, you know, going forward, we're definitely a happier ship and a more productive ship since, in a weird way. And we've learned a lot and learned a lot of skills. We also learned the guys working remotely from home. And Will, I'm sure Will knows this better than me. You know, I think they're more productive working from home than sitting in an office environment, where they get distracted with other phone calls or people chatting or whatever. They're just seeing that there's more productivity from, I mean, we've got a load of claims to book in. And there seems to be, believe it or not, we communicate every day. We have Zoom meetings every day with them and to make sure they're all right with their mental health as well. We have to take that into consideration, of course, and to make sure they're fine within themselves to keep working from home. The kids' situation, I mean, you know, the kids had 2 months off and then the summer holidays came along. I mean, so, but, you know, I'm absolutely delighted with them. And, you know, we've got a great backbone here at CFLine, and they're the energy of the company. And, yep, so I'm I'm very pleased that we managed to keep going, and they're the reason.
Yeah, and one of the things I've seen across the consultancy business is just the real sense and planning that some people that own businesses have been able to do during this, and the understanding of where the cash lies, what's going to happen in the future, how they're going to manage out furlough, whether or not they take deferred taxation, and watching the cash carefully rather than spending it too quickly with the knowledge of the pressures that's going to come along, and of course, eased by insurers. So we've seen a lot more of that, and I think we're going to see a lot more understanding. If you think on the number of suppliers, and I think I said this last week, I think I mentioned particularly alternative accommodation suppliers are talked about, Martin Oldjoy and Tim Goodman, people like that. People like these, at the same time, you've got different sized companies, at the same time as having to locate their people at home, which is a task that we've never had to do before. But, you know, what might have been in their business recovery plan,
yep,
then had to deal with every hotel in the UK closing and then having to decamp people out that and put them in there. I'm sure that wasn't in a disaster recovery plan.
So no.
We'll probably see more disaster recovery plans.
I've got to say, Alan, just going back to your original question about, you know, that at the end of March, there's a few things keeping me awake at night, but we obviously have hundreds of customers in alternative accommodation, and some of them are in long-term lets and some were in hotels, and the situation, it was a genuine nightmare for the industry, because that was keeping me awake at night. I was thinking, I've got these customers' properties, they can't go back to their properties. The hotels they're in are closing. and at the time, now you can get Airbnbs and short-term lets, but in the immediate aftermath of lockdown being announced, you couldn't even get those. So I think you know, we felt a little bit of that sting for our customers, and I think that was possibly even more so than the likes of the Boscastle, the Hull, the Tewkesbury floods, the storms of February this year. I genuinely think that alternative accommodation situation for me personally and my team, I think was probably the most challenging situation that I've had in my career.
I think so, and I think what this shows is that when we actually take the shackles off and everybody works together and trusts one another, and as you know, I know people express that view, but whether insurers trust supplier, but there was an equal challenge the other way as well for supplier trust insurers, and I think we're really getting through that. Yeah,
sure.
And if that then can manifest itself to the suppliers trusting each other, which is another vital part of the chain, and then I think coming out of this. And again, in my day job, this is something we talk a lot with between insurers and buyers. How can we go forward and pick up the lessons and the good stuff that we've got there to make sure that what we do in the future for policyholders is great? What, Steve?
Can I ask Will a question? Just to, sorry about it. Will, how did you find the supply chain from an LNG perspective? I mean, were people stepping up to the plate more, you know, and some disappeared, or was that quite difficult for you?
No, it was as I expected.
Right.
Suppliers were really supportive. I mean, there was some panic because obviously you're looking down as a supplier, and some of our suppliers are, you know, some of us say our building contract partners only turn over a few million a year. You know, they are classified as small businesses, and they're looking down the barrel at. But what we know now is that all of you have lost about a quarter of your annual income, of your turnover, in terms of new instructions, maybe up to a quarter. So there was panic, but the panic was a controlled panic amongst some. And I think once we put some measures in place really quick around payments, and we increased our rates and so on. And I think once they saw that, they knew that we were here to support them. But yeah, I honestly, hand on heart, I couldn't pick out a single issue we've had a single supplier throughout the whole process. And I think, you know, as an insurer, you know, we fairly, obviously we've had a significant challenges from COVID as well, but, you know, the premiums still get paid, the policies are still there.
Yeah.
But for our supply chain, you know, if you think about motor, that just the claims just disappeared. You know, in my supply chain, I have suppliers that rely on burglary claims. Burglaries just weren't happening. Nor were AD claims, so, you know, or accidental loss. So, So those suppliers were in a real state of a flux at first. Yeah. You know, they supported us, and I can't really speak highly enough of the supply chain. They like they always do in a surge. You know, they always step up, and they were just fantastic and on every level.
That's good. Well, like we said, it's bringing us all together a bit more, I think.
I think that's it. What's it, Steve? What's the strangest situation you've come across in all of
I've been in some bad situations and really strange. I can't mention on this podcast, Alan. But
you could keep them work related, it would really.
Okay. well, basically, it was traveling down from Bromsgrove the first couple of weeks. Of lockdown when it was, it was like the Mary Celeste out there, basically, and I was coming to and fro from work. There was nobody about. It was just so weird. And I think it started hit home then for me. I was traveling down from Bromsgrove to Worcester to look at a job down the M5, well, as you know, 8 miles. And the only thing coming past me or on the road was 40 footers, you know, and that was, there was no cars, nothing. And I was in my little truck, and I was pulled over by the police. And, you know, and I was just coming off Junction 6 there, well, at Five Ways. And,
that's where I come off to go to work, yeah.
Well, right, so I was just coming up there, and it was, and I wasn't speeding, you know, I mean, Jesus Christ, nobody on the road. And then the blues come on, the blues and twos, and pulled me over, and where are you going to, sir? You know, and I went, I'm just going to Worcester to look at some works, for some essential insurance repair works. Have you any ID? You know, and I had my little clearance sort of safe lane pass thing. And I think then, Alan, it just hit me. This is weird. This is a strange situation. And they were they understood the situation, but they started to ask other questions. And I'm thinking, well, guys, I'm going to look at a job. You know, am I allowed to, do you want me to go home? But this is an emergency essential works. And it was a traffic branch, and I said, okay, we're happy with this. We're happy with your story, sir. Carry on and get home as quick as you can. And that, when he said get home as quick as you can, I thought, you know, Jesus. The last time I was pulled over like that was in Belfast in the 80s. And that was bad, I tell you.
You did get home as quick as you can, yeah.
I did get home as quick as I could. But so that was a bit, you know, there was loads of weird situations, but that was strange, and that brought it home the first couple of weeks. Something serious is happening here.
Sure. What about you, Mo? What was the strangest situation you've come across in all of this?
I've got a couple, really. I think in my personal life, it was my son was doing his gap year in Australia and phoning him about a week before our lockdown and demanding he came home. He was in Brisbane, where he'd met a young lady, and demanding he came home when he was having the time of his life with a new girlfriend, and him going no, and me saying get yourself on a plane and get him out. That was quite strange. But I think for me, from a work perspective, I, like most people, I have a routine. You know, I live in the West Country, but I work in Birmingham, and I stay in Birmingham a couple of nights a week, and I stay to the kind of the end. So if you might remember in that lead up to lockdown, most companies were sending people home, but because I still have people in the office, I'm still coming to the office every day in the last few weeks. And that night when Boris announced we were going into lockdown, I was in my hotel and I checked in, and then I checked out a few hours later, and saying goodbye to the people in the hotel that I've been seeing every day in the week for 4 years, and going home thinking, I'm probably not going to see some of them ever again, and they've been a massive part of my life. And also, you know, going home and thinking, you know, in an insurance company of 850 people, I guess people move on. You know, it can be a little bit transient in our industry. And even now, you know, there's still people you make friends at work, and people that I've got close to, you know, that work for me or, you know, even say my manager and so on that I get really well with. And having not seen those people for 4 or 5 months, I think that is a really odd situation to be in, and quite sad in many ways. So I think it's just like almost, you know, as humans, we bond with people, and I think it's that, you know, just that maybe in all of us suffer from an element of separation anxiety at times. And I think just hurtling down the M5 to Bristol on that Monday night or Tuesday night Boris announced it, thinking, yeah, this is quite surreal and bizarre. Yeah, I would say that's probably the weirdest moment of, of my life at the time.
Yeah,
it certainly was. Mine is a bit different. Mine is a bit self-inflicted. We look at the strangest time. During one of the more recent webinars, we were ready to start, and the camera and the computer decided they didn't want to play anymore. I later find out this was probably my fault. Yeah, you were on that, Steve.
Yeah.
And in a last-minute panic, I managed to get Zoom on my phone, which was good. So I was actually thinking, hey, I'm the cool guy here. I understand technology, which was killing myself. But then people like my colleague Nick and others were texting me to say, you're making people ill because you're holding the phone in your hand. So therefore, I was talking. Obviously, it was swaying back and forth.
Yeah, it was all over the place.
And I couldn't understand. What do you mean I'm paying people ill? Then I had to find a place to put it.
So it wasn't your face, Al. Don't worry about it.
Well, Steve, thanks very much. It was great to have you back on again. We might do that in a while. I agree with all the stuff you said. It's been very strange. It's been fantastic for a lot of people in the industry. But it's still very worrying. And I know that both of you from an insurance supplier perspective are very committed to making sure that we do everything to get through this and learn. That's why we've had on. So thanks for your contributions, both of you, three or four episodes, if that's the way to put it.
No problem, Alan.
I can't see it. This is an ILC home webinar. Hope it's, I hope you've enjoyed it. I hope all that we're doing helps. And we'll be back next week with something live on the environmental. So thanks very much. Guys, we appreciate it.
Cheers, Al. Cheers, Will. All the best.